Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'm going to pick Satchel Jackson. Tom Howley's Mr. Thomas Hall on the board, fresh from a big softball victory last night. I'm fresh from somewhat of a late night at Bacchanali is with people from the show and some people from college that are in for the Southern Cal game tomorrow. The S&P futures up 350. Dow futures up 36. NASDAQ futures down 29. Big news last night was Snapchat missing their earnings. We'll go into that a little bit. We have Kevin. Did he make it back to Michigan?
You have a groggy Kevin O'Neill this morning.
What time did you roll in?
I got home about 1.
1? So you hung with those guys. You closed back in Bacchanalia, in other words.
Definitely. Oh, by the way, a fellow behind the bar is a little bit miffed that you didn't say goodbye to him.
Oh, really? Well, we were kind of...
Well, Tom, he didn't say goodbye to me. What's up?
Oh, God, Danny.
No, I think he's feeling like you don't like him anymore.
I got to go back and have dinner next week then, I guess. God, is that place classic or what?
It's inconvenient truth, yeah, huh, Chief?
For those that... that don't know Chicago too well, there's a place on what used to be the Italian neighborhood on the near south side. It's all on one street. Actually, there was a couple places on Western, but they probably had it at their highlight, heyday. I'm going to say 6 Italian places on Oakley, which is essentially a side street, and a couple of them on Western. And these places were fed by, there was a lot of industry in there. They're all little places, they're all little family-owned places. And they're fed by an awful lot of industry over there. Romano Brothers Beverage was there, and they were big drinkers, big, you know, go figure. And Ryerson Steel had a huge operation maybe half a mile away. And all along Blue Island, see the train tracks that are just south of the street there in Blue Island, I don't know if you took Blue Island in there, Kevin, but the Angle Street was all big industry. The south of there, between there and the river. That's pretty much all gone. So all the lunches, all that other stuff, that whole, you know, everybody from Ryerson would go to lunch at these places and stuff, and they're still in there, and they've got a kind of a niche. A couple of them have closed, and Danny's second generation, and it's him and his wife. They live upstairs, and the lady who was waiting on us, I think, was a cousin. I mean, so you go in there at a dinner, you end up knowing the whole family, right? And but I mean, the food's great, but. God bless. How much garlic did we have last night?
Well, I'm working from home today as a result.
Oh, God.
Nobody should have to be around me after that much.
Oh, man. Plus, they always throw stuff at us free, right? So we get our appetizers, and there's 5 of us. What do we have? We had 6 of us. And so but of course, you know, Thomas, they always go, you've been there with me, haven't you? Yeah, well, then they bring the...
Yeah, back in the day. It's been a while.
Well, yeah. I was there once during the COVID thing. And, they were selling their sauces and stuff. But so they bring us 2 huge bowls of, like, pesto gnocchis, the little potato pasta things. God, were they good? Well, I'm sitting there going, what do we even need dinner for? Of course, then we have dinner on top of everything else. But then Kevin did the worst thing that can happen to you when you're out and trying to be a good boy. People show up just as you're leaving. That are very interesting, and whoever Maddie said some people were was I was talking about Bitcoin being worth nothing, that I should have some people that knew all about blockchain and so forth. So, out of the blue, Kevin presents me this amazingly outgoing, attractive Irish young lady who knows all about it, and she's going to be a guest one day and tell us about it. So, the listener will be happy, but not as happy as me because I get to meet her. So, how's that?
Yeah, Ellen's, she's really kind of the Energizer bunny.
Oh, God, yeah.
And she's got an interesting business. So she came out of, Notre Dame has a program called STEAM. It's a master's program. And they,
master's of what?
Really to build social entrepreneurs. So she started up a business called the Digital Leader Academy, and they develop technology content for generally for high schools and colleges. So I have met her through business, and she helped me develop some course content related to blockchain. She knows it, makes it work. But the other young lady that was with her, Fernanda, does the content. A funny story about Fernanda, because when the first time through that we did the blockchain content, she sat in my class. Well, of course, she joined it. It was virtual class. It was last spring, so we were still virtual, and so she joined in via Zoom. I have a very much a tendency, as I'm sure any listener who's heard me a lot will attest, to sort of veer off in different directions, tangent, not completely out of the blue, but if I have a good story to tell that sort of supports what we're discussing, I'll tell it. And so when we got done, the next day we just did a debrief on it, Ellen and Fernanda and I, and and so we were talking about it, and I said, well, yeah, the only thing was, I could have used a little bit more time. I didn't plan for as much time as it took. And Fernanda says, well, maybe we should get you an egg timer so you know how to stay on topic. And I said, sorry. And she has not lived that down, by the way. She hears about that almost every time we talk.
What would a poor guy do?
No, we're not doing that. These are educational moments.
Well, hope that
we're not crimping my teaching style here.
I hope that dude was a lean dog, because with those two amazingly powerful and bright ladies, you better be on your toes. You don't belong there.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I had not met him before. So,
and they were interested. How the hell did they make it to Bacchanalias from your class in South Bend?
No. They're based in Chicago. They were actually in Chicago with a business partner that they use, and I have used SimbaChain, and SimbaChain has a blockchain platform. And as Ellen described it, and I told her this a long time ago, I said they need a better user interface. They need, I had all my students build out the supply chain for coffee on the blockchain platform, and that was good, but they need a better user interface. Theirs is kind of designed by programming people for programming people, and we've all seen those kind of systems. And she said, yeah, they have a bunch of no personality developers who are brilliant at what they do, but they don't have that part.
Well, so do they have a business address here in Chicago where they do this, or is this all kind of from home or consulting?
But, they were doing this several day seminar, not seminar, but sort of a collaboration with their business partners in Chicago. Simba actually is another outfit that has emerged out of Notre Dame. So I don't know if they're headquartered at Notre Dame or in South Bend, or if they're headquartered in Chicago. But they did their seminar in Chicago.
Well, some
of course,
people.
Ellen had said she hasn't been back to campus for a football weekend in a long time, and they said, yeah, we have this nice thing, and then we're gonna run through Saturday. And she's thinking, oh, good, I get to, I can drive over for the night game. And they say, and then we have some real fun scheduled afterwards. You're going to get to go to the Chicago Fire game.
Oh, God.
Hey, Chief, so we got
Notre Dame, USC.
Chief, we have a email from a listener, and kind of to follow up on the questions you had to start the show about Snapchat. Apparently, they had they gave a forecast of about 30% of their sales for promotions and in the fourth quarter where the analysts were estimating it should have been 50% advertising revenue.
Yep.
And I guess, do you believe that this is something that you need to look at other social media platforms?
They're all getting whacked this morning. Facebook's down. Basically down $11. Twitter's down a bunch. Yeah, it's spreading around.
So I guess the question is here, how do you leverage this type of information?
Well, this is what, that is the question. I mean, we're talking about, we had this discussion last night, Kevin, would you say our group, when you try and do something with those guys, it is absolutely like herding cats or what?
I didn't have to herd them last night. I just had to wait around for you all to arrive.
Well,
yes, of course it's like herding cats.
That was me herding the cats. That's why we're half hour late. But anyway, Daryl was giving me this long story on the way back, and he said, what do you think of the market? And I am answering your question, Thomas. And so, Daryl, these companies are amazingly high priced. They're priced, I'll be nice and say they're priced to perfection. It reminds me of 1999. He said, well, it's all the new systems. It's the new world. These companies have all the new ideas. I said, I will never debate that. I will never debate that. I said, but that doesn't mean 40 companies get to trade for a bazillion times earnings or maybe never any earnings and, 100 times revenue. And he says, well, yeah, but that's the future. I said, yes, out of those 100 companies, 5 or 10 of them are the futures and 95 of them, or maybe, I might be a little grumpy here, but, most of them are pretenders. They're never going to get there. And if you looked at, and again, I'm not bad-mouthing any of these places. I'm just saying they're too high priced, and because money's too cheap. I mean, it's not their fault. Okay, they're just doing business and doing the best they can. And all of them have an idea. You listen to CEOs; they're working. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. This is the American way. This is good. This is not bad things. But you can be priced too high. I mean, you can have the world's nicest tie and say you want $1,000 for it. And you say, oh, okay then. I guess you keep your tie. But these companies, when you have this huge lofty goal of you're going to like double every year and you're priced like that, and all of a sudden you say, well, maybe we're not going to double this year. We're only going to be up 50% in revenue or 30%, like you just mentioned, Thomas. That's not bad. The economy is not as good as everybody tells you it is. So a 30% growth is actually pretty damn good. So I'm not.
I think that they were talking about the final quarter for the holiday, where typically
everybody now is talking about this quarter is not going to be the quarter. But I mean, if you've been watching and to be blunt, and listening, I mean, the Atlanta Fed is down to a 0.5% growth number, and I don't think they're using the right inflation number. So if they're down to 0.5% growth, if you subtract where I think the inflation is and where I think a lot of our listeners think it is, they're talking about negative growth right now. And yet if you listen to people all day long, oh, my God, I can't believe how great the economy is. We're firing out of this COVID thing. I mean, it's incredible. The fact is, that's BS. But I'm saying if it was $40 a share and they said, by the way, our revenue gain is going to be 30%, that'd probably be a good thing, but they're not. They were $75 a share, or 80, which is too high, in my opinion. So, I mean, Kevin, am I being brutally honest here this morning, or what?
I think that's fair. I also heard a little bit this morning, but I wasn't up early enough to actually dig into it, and that is that Facebook and their related businesses, it's not just that ad revenue is down. It's that they're having a hard time tracking ad hits for their advertisers.
Yeah, yes.
Or in other words, that their technology is potentially flawed significantly. And if it is, then they don't have anything to sell. If they can't tell you how effective your ad was, they're kind of cooked. That's a big problem.
So this is an interesting thing too, right? So when I look at the social media market, right? So for example, Trump's got a new media platform that he wants to put out called Truth Social, which is highly entertaining in the name alone. But it kind of harkens me back to like the thought process of when you had regular TV and then you started to expand to have like so many cable stations, and how does that affect the value of the marketing, right? So the question being, now that you're having so many platforms, does that start to diminish what these companies can ask? Or is the site so big that they dictate what the value
is? That's the whole point. The immortal words of Chuck Henry, who was the president of CBOE and a real nice guy and a smart guy, and I was the chairman of the marketing committee, he goes, Tom, the old saying on marketing is, I know I'm wasting half of my money on my marketing, I just don't know which half. Trying to figure out exactly what your ad revenue and what your marketing does for you is exceptionally difficult. Exceptionally difficult. It always has been. And I have to believe that, I've been out of it since I was chairman of the marketing committee for 5 years at CBOE. I've been out of it for so long. I mean, we do the stuff at PTI, but we don't really spend a lot of money on, but it's the hardest thing in the world. You throw an ad on a radio or something, is it worthwhile? Is it a touch? Is it not a touch? I mean, for instance, when I, this is a little off, not off topic, but it kind of gets me to the answer, is that, people are going to advertise on Snap, or they're going to advertise on Twitter if you can, or you've got something going on Facebook. Unless you can sort of track that, and even then, you can't really track it because you don't know how many touches people have. And I'll give you a real quick example. And Kevin, I think, will kind of understand this. When I got on the marketing committee, they had done a whole bunch of radio ads at CBOE, and they used to advertise seminars because they wanted to see people interested in options, and they'd show up and they'd kind of show them, hand out a lot of good, really approved, really good studies on doing covered rights, doing protective puts, those kinds of things. So I was part of this because I said, look, we have to be able to hand stuff out that are strategies that people get to understand. And if you just talk to them and they walk out without anything to take with and review, doesn't do anybody any good. So we put together four or five things for strategies that were all approved by everybody, pain in the ass to get approved, but we did. And they were really, pillars of the industry, really, on what certain strategies were and what to expect. So anyway, they would spend money on radio to get people to come to these seminars. And we never got a call. Never got a call. And then they decide, okay, we're going to send out mailers. And Kevin, you know about the mail. I assume people still sell all these lists, don't they? I mean, we'd go and we'd buy lists. And what used to pay, Kevin? Like a half a cent a name or something? You'd buy a list of, give me an example. It would be like all people they know were like CEOs or people who lived in a certain district that had a lot of money. Or there's a zillion lists out there people used to have. So we'd buy, 20 of these lists. And we'd send out, the chairman before me sent out stuff. Kevin, this is 1992, and they're selling out stuff that cost us $4.50 a mailer. I mean, really nice stuff. and we get like, and those things, if you got 1% return, you were doing really good. Like if you sent 100 and one person called you, that was considered good back in those days. And we're getting...
Anything from 1 to 2% on mailers was always, that was good response.
Well, we were getting half of 1%, so that was a clunk too. The radio's useless, and I said, since we already sent the stuff out, let's try, I mean, I don't think for a second that I had any clairvoyance here, because I didn't. I said, why don't we just do a radio spot thing while we send them out? But we hit some station, wasn't that much money. This is in like Louisville or someplace. So we send it out, guess what, Ken? We get like 5% return. So now we still didn't get a call on radio, but enough people heard it on radio that was like touch number one. And then when they got the thing in the mail, they go, this is the knucklehead I was listening to. It wasn't me. This is the knucklehead that heard on the radio. It sounded interesting, but I'm driving in my car. I couldn't write the phone number down or any of those things. But yeah, I was sort of interested. Now here, they dropped this thing right on my lap. I'm going to go to this thing. So the combination of the two, when both of them were clunks, was a huge success for us in getting people to come to these things. Now, and the crowds were terrific, because our lists were good. It turned out our lists were really good. They were qualified people. So when you look at something like a Snap or a Twitter, I think, Kevin, it's very, very difficult for you to, quote, prove to your marketing customers what you're doing for them. I mean, it's been my experience. You agree or not?
No, I agree, and I actually think about the only way that a lot of that works. Now, you can, when you do direct mail or anything like it, there are really good ways to measure response. I'm with you that if you reinforce it, that you may do quite well in the process of just doubling up and making it work for you. The catch to it always, and the way I always look at it is, when you decide when to spend, it gets down to how many customers do I need to pay for it? Because there's a certain amount of faith that you get from it, that you have to have in your advertising. So if I do something, if I were to market something for a program at school, and I say, look, it's only a few bucks to run some radio spots. If I get one student out of this, just do some quick math and say how much per credit hour, how many credit hours do you take? Good. Here's what you get out of it. Easy call. When you get into mass marketing on something like Facebook, it's not so easy to do that. It's what I need 10,000 customers out of this. How do I count that?
Yeah. Well, like Super Bowl, but I think part of it, Kevin, again, I want you to critique me. Part of it is you need to know the difference. And Thomas, I'm getting back to your question. You need to know the difference between marketing and PR, because there is a difference. I mean, for instance, if Pepsi people have the ability to buy Pepsi every day. Okay, so if Pepsi spends a bunch of money on the Super Bowl, I've actually read some of this stuff. We had a listener a long time ago that sent some of this to me. They actually, some of their marketing analysis, if they spend whatever, they could spend what, $15 million on a Super Bowl sometimes, Kevin? Something like that? It's a huge number. It might even be more than that. And so they can chart the next 2 or 3 weeks Coke versus Pepsi sales, essentially worldwide. And virtually every year that they've spent that dough on a Super Bowl, especially if they knock them dead with the ads, they can see a bulge where if Pepsi's, 17% of the market, that the next 2 weeks they'll be maybe 20% the next week and 19, then 18, and it drops off after the. So that they could actually tell you that we paid back our, we made money on this deal because we're normally 17 and we spent 15. And oh, by the way, our revenue, not to mention the, some of the people who distribute it and stuff, went up 40 and then, or whatever, pick a number. And we can actually tell you that we actually made money on this marketing effort. It's like, putting a huge, end of the store beer thing in Myers or someplace that it costs you, Myers wanted, $1,500 for you to have the end of the aisle or something. But boy, we sold an extra 100 cases of Coors or something. And by the way, we got our $1,500 back in spade. That's marketing. Okay. But now PR is putting, PTI Securities on top of the United Center, on top of the hockey arena, right? Nobody's going to come by there, but now all of a sudden, if they hear me on the air, maybe, or if they see something in print, you're now starting to touch people where you're predisposing them that when they actually do want to have a brokerage firm or when they want to do something, they will say, what about these guys in PTI?
Well, Chief.
So there's a big difference. I mean, I'm not looking to get 50 customers the day I put that sign up there, but I want it ingrained in everybody. It's like subliminal.
Well, yeah. In Facebook world, you are trying to. Really, the click through.
Yes, that's marketing
two
for sure.
That happen when you click through. One is the most basic, that you click through, you go to the website. So what Facebook is saying, hey, I'll send the customer your way. Once that customer lands on your site, it's up to you.
Right, so they get paid for the click-through. So that's direct marketing.
They get paid for the clicks.
Well, so... go ahead.
But part two, so if your website sucks, if your response time is terrible, any of those kinds of things, that's on you. You're just
right.
Wasting your money because people don't put up with slow websites.
You had your chance, I got it.
The other part of it is a lot of the click-through is for data gathering, information gathering about you specifically or about, or more generically, for accumulation of marketing data. And I don't, I think that's a problem area for counting, and assigning value to it. And, I have to dig a little bit more into why Facebook and TikTok and so on, why are they having trouble now you know, accurately measuring just the amount of success that anybody has with the marketing, depending on which objective they have.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Kevin.
And I don't know the answer to that. You know, I just heard the report this morning.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say,
groggy this morning.
Well, you guys are more into this than me. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they were always oversold. That people always thought it was a huge place to put your ad. Now that they're really looking at it, maybe they were oversold on it. That
may be true, Tom. But if they're not able to accurately report too, that means they have a product flaw. As we, you know, no different than somebody who has to do a product recall for a manufactured product. You have a flawed product. That's a different problem for them.
Well, as somebody who's tried once in a while to sell some ads for Stacks and Jacks. I've got to break here in a second. In that world, when somebody starts grilling you about how can you specifically tell me how many listeners you have and who they are and stuff, what they're really doing is telling you no. Because nobody can really give you that kind of information. When we were on the score, stuff with John, nobody can give you down to a gnat's behind who's listening, who they are. You can't do it. You try. But if they really want to advertise on your station, they will. And if they don't, they'll find an excuse not to. But I think part of it, and let's talk about when we come back, is how do you value, because I think they sold everybody, in the new world, you're being sold about the value not only of the client, like GoDaddy, for instance. There's nobody going to, after the Super Bowl day, no matter how great their commercials are, no matter how hot the ladies are, If you don't have a need of a website or whatever email address or something,
web address, yeah.
You're not going to pick up the phone and buy one just for laughs, right? You don't need it. And the classic, I know we got a break here, but since I'm on a roll, the classic situation for that was back in our day before Thomas, four or five years in a row, the best marketing campaigns by far were Alka-Seltzer.
Well, Chief, when we get back on the break, too, I definitely, you know, I'm a solopreneur, and marketing and branding is very much part of the services that I provide. So I think I have a little bit of an insight.
Well, but it's all about, when we come back, it's all about the good itself. I mean, Alka-Seltzer was 5 years. They had the best commercials. But guess what? You're not going to go out and buy Alka-Seltzer just because of the commercial. You're going to buy them when you have a tummy ache.
Well, but I think the branding is irrelevant. I think the platform and how you utilize it is what's going to differentiate.
S&P futures up 5. NASDAQ futures on 25. Just what we're talking about, the NASDAQ down a little bit because of Snapchat taking a few with it. The rest of the market's pretty darn strong. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Hope Breaks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Thomas Hall on the board. S&P Futures up 550. S&P Futures down 25.75. We've been talking about that. It was started by Snapchat. By the way, Kevin, before I get into this, we brought a couple of words out of the dictionary that we thought were lost forever. Stagflation, I think we use quicker than anybody else. And I think somebody on the show was Carl, brought up the old misery index. I'm going to bring up one more today, but Snapchat. Back when we all started doing that in the 80s, when individual stocks that people thought were worth like 80 and would open up at like 20, it was known as the trap door. How's that for a term? It was the trap door where a stock just dropped and never came back.
So, Chief, I have no context, but just off of the word stag, what do you call
stagflation.
It? Stagflation. Would that be a inflation based off of one individual?
No, inflation tied to a stagnant economy.
Oh, stagnant. Okay. So when I hear stag, I was like, oh, they're rolling stag, like
no,
solo.
Stagflation.
We're here to learn, right?
This is what happens when you have artists
it's
on
no,
the show.
It's a no growth economy with inflation.
Yes.
We're rolling stag.
Yeah, oh, God. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 96. Now, these guys got hammered yesterday. They might bounce back some today. Up 0.3%. Shanghai down 12.3%. Hang Seng up 109.4%. So somehow or another, after this whole Evergrande fiasco, they claim they're coming up with the $83 million this week to pay the interest. Now, after supposedly hooking up with another firm, it fell apart, but now all of a sudden, miraculously, or whatever, maybe nicely, this interest payment evidently is going to get paid this week. That's the rumor. That's why a lot of these markets are firming up over there. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 137.9%. Now, these guys were stagnant yesterday, and then we were up, so now they're catching up. FTSE up 41.6%. CAC around up 73. That's 1.1%. It's a big move over in the French market. As a review of yesterday, the Dow was down 6. S&P up 13 to a new record. NASDAQ was up 94. Then 94 came flying down after the close when the Snapchat thing came out. Bonds, well, they're unchanged, but about to 1.68, which has got to be as high as we've been. The bond, get a load of this, only minus 0.09. Wow, they might actually make it to zero here. Japan, still the same, though, positive 0.09. We've got oil up 55 cents, 83.05. I think it's the first time we've seen it over 83. Brent up 67 cents, 85.28, so that spread is $2.23. Natural gas up 8 cents, 5.20. It didn't take long, under $5, so as of now, it was a sale over 6 and a buy under 5. Buy low, sell high, yes. Or you can say sometimes buy high and sell even higher. But anyway, there's a big move in natural gas. RBOB up 2 cents to 249. We've got gold up $13, 1795, now really threatening this 1800 number. Silver up 27 cents, 2444. Copper up 2 cents, 458. And we've got Bitcoin up 348 to 63,428. Other earnings stocks, this PEG, Intel, is down 562 at 5038. So get a load of this, Kevin. I think it's trading like 56. I don't like this thing on earnings, so I I put the 53 spread on, thinking I'm bearish. The thing blew through my 53 like dinner through a goose. What's wrong with this company? Down 10%. Every earnings, the thing gets clobbered, them and IBM. Anyway, Thomas, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right, and good morning, everyone. It's now 6:38 here in the Chicagoland area. The weather today here in Chicago is going to be a bit fallish, as it is 47 degrees currently. We're going to reach a high of 54. Mostly overclouded skies for the majority of the day, with a slight chance of precipitation. Our Phoenix listeners, they are currently at 61 degrees. They're going to reach a high of 90, Chief. So nothing there that you'd want to take part of in today's, weather.
90 in Phoenix is nice.
I know. For the traffic here in the Chicagoland area, there are a couple things to, report, as we are starting to see a buildup on the Kennedy going into downtown. The backup is starting around Division, so beware of that as you enter in for the...
I could have told you that.
Well, I'm telling you now, so I'm letting everyone else know.
There's a stalled truck right about Van Buren.
Oh, finally, also on the I-57, did you know, Chief, that there is a injury report, as there was a crash that's slowing down at 111. So, definitely be on the lookout for that. We got to bump back up this real quick here. Nope. Anyways, so let me get into sports real quick, Chief, as we were able to see the Golden State Warriors win 115-113 in the NBA. The NFL, there was a football game, as the Browns were able to win with a backup quarterback and backup running back. They beat the Broncos 17-14. The NBA schedule is a full slate tonight, as the Bulls will have their opening home opener tonight here at the United Center.
Wasn't Cleveland without the quarterback? They were dogs last night at home.
They were 10.
I think Nick Fangio's in trouble.
Know the guy at Denver? Yeah.
Yeah. Former Bears defensive coordinator. Yes, he's
a great defensive coordinator. It has not gone well for him as the head coach out there.
Well, I have a question to you guys on.
He was terrific as a defensive coordinator, and I always respected that, even though he applied for the Bears job and didn't get it when Nagy got it, he stuck around and made it work as a holdover, and they maintained some continuity on the staff that seemed to work well together. And that's the kind of situation that in the world tends to be more tense than productive. So the fact that he made it work says good things about him.
Well, I have two questions for you.
Not as a head coach necessarily.
I have two questions for you, Mavens. One is, to put this marketing thing sort of to bed, and if time says I can, but I also want an interesting article here about should Joe Jackson be in the Hall of Fame, so we could lighten things up, because we'll get Carl coming up a little bit in a bit. And in a bit, and we'll be talking.
Are you saying that it's not going to be light when Carl gets here?
Not usually. We're usually in the market.
Carl's like the what's the drill sergeant in stripes? Hulk guy. Yeah, he's like Hulk guy. I got a hell of a sense of humor.
Well, the question about the marketing thing, and Thomas, I'd love your input on this, because I think this is where you were going. I mean, Kevin, when you talk about, I think for a long time, I mean, if let's put it this way. If somebody advertises on Stocks and Jacks, they're going to want to know, all right, I got I'm a orthopedic surgeon. How many broken legs did I get from Stocks and Jacks? It's pretty much that simple. You know, and it's really hard to, and you might say, well, Doc, everybody's dying to come see you, but they're not going to break their leg on purpose, which would be my response. But there has been this value attached to not, if somebody clicks through, like if I get a Duluth trading ad or something stuck on my Google, and I click through, there's a value to that. Now, if I get there and all the stuff, you know, okay, it's on sale, but I don't know my size or I don't like the color, and I don't buy anything, there's this residual idea that of information regarding me. I don't know what they get and how much they get. Is there a chance, Kevin, that maybe the value people have put on this, all this quote information about people, is there a chance that could be getting repriced, that maybe it's not really worth as much as people thought? I mean, my private life isn't as interesting as they thought it was. I mean, is there a chance there's some of that going on with when you see something like the Snapchat having this ancillary information that they were sold on? Well, you're not really going to get a sale from your ad on Snapchat, but oh, by the way, you're going to get all this other info. Is there a chance that people are saying, yeah, I got all this other info, but it hasn't done squat for me yet? Is some of that maybe happening or not?
Oh, it could be, I suppose. It's an interesting question, Tom. I don't know the answer, but I can speculate. You know, not knowing the answer has never stopped me from talking before. When you think about it, though, marketing to individuals is tough unless that's all about building a relationship and understanding a customer need. But mass marketing is people become incredibly predictable because as you gather data, that doesn't mean that the next person that walks in the door is predictable, but it does mean that, you know, if 1,000 people walk in the door, I know what I'm going what to expect at a very fine level. And, you know, that's really why, historically direct mail has worked, is because you know exactly what's going to push the right button. So I think there's value. There's always value. There's always value to gathering data. But there aren't very many people out there that know what to do with data when they have a lot of it.
Well, you know, some of it, though, let me finish this, Thomas, and I promise to let you pipe in. But some of it is so simple. Improvements, because one of the ladies who was marketing at the CBOE, and she was really bright, and not to mention she was a spectacular lady, nice family, a whole bit. So we used to put, the CBOE, we would put ads. I'm going to go back to the words, Time Magazine, Newsweek. There's the national ads, right, Kevin? And then there's every local area you can put ads on for a lot less money. And you can get a page in Newsweek or Time or on TV or whatever. Like every ad you see on CNBC is not a national ad, right? There's local slots. So you can put an ad in there for PTI Securities, and I'm not going to be in Denver because why do I want to be in Denver? We don't have an office there. So, you can have I don't know what the numbers are. I used to, but out of the hour, there might be three or four that you can buy locally, and you can actually get them for only specific areas where in this, it might even be zip codes. I don't want to buy all of Chicago. It's going to sound horrible. I don't want a PTI ad in Inglewood. I'm not going to get a client from there, which I wish I would. But the point being is you can be real specific in where you want to go with your local ad. But anyway, in Newsweek and stuff, this lady's name was Joni, and she goes, what are you doing? What are you putting just a regular old page ad in Newsweek for? And I go, but the committee's like, what are you talking about? And she goes, what you want is you want the middle page in Newsweek, and you want your phone number on a separate little strip that is taped or pasted, whatever you want to call it, glued to the page, that people can pull that phone number strip off and bring it to them to their telephone or something, and not have to bring the whole magazine because people will forget to do that. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, it makes sort of sense. Kevin, the difference in the ad was spectacular. And just having the little detachable little piece of paper, have you ever seen that? Nobody has magazines anymore. Remember that in magazines? Just having the detachable, it was like a post-it note stuck in there that you could peel off.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's like people who put little flyers on bulletin boards, and then they put a bunch of tear-off phone numbers for you.
And, I mean, it made an incredible difference. And I would never have thought of that.
So let me ask you, Chief, and then this is going to get to my point. If I were to be a brand manager for you, and I would ask you a simple question, I would say to you, Chief, we can go down two avenues. We can either try to market through television or we can market through social media. What would your initial, if obviously you want to do a mix of both, but we're going to focus our main efforts in what area would you think?
I'm gonna say for PTI, okay, and I know a little bit about this, but certainly not enough to help anybody really. I'm gonna say for PTI, if we were to do say a Super Bowl ad, we're gonna spend we're gonna reach, use the term 100 million people. Well, there's only 300,000 people in there that I want as my client.
And probably less than that.
And probably less than that.
You pretty right. So that's
a real sledgehammer approach for me. That's why I never could figure out why GoDaddy was on there. I think it was more for ego than anything else. So the idea is, how can I target my stuff to where my stuff is only getting to people that I really want?
Well, here's the beauty and also the issue that I think that social media is having right now is the fact that essentially, you as a business, you start your profile, you start to send out information through yours. But it is dependent upon you developing your following through that media, right? So if you're good at capturing people through your content and the things that you're putting out, you are going to develop a following, which then should essentially allow you to monetize that in some type of way.
Correct.
You're going to then, you know, if you have a million followers, if you get 1% of that to be your client, then and then if you have that type of following, you can monetize it in other ways. There's going to be products that you could say you can go to. You know, let's just say Alka-Seltzer, like you were saying earlier. Hey, we think that your demographic fits within ours. Can you put something out through your social media, and then we'll pay you X amount of dollars for every time you do it.
Yeah, I'm not bright enough to do that, but that's
what
I can.
Well, but what I'm saying is, this is where, you know, that's where I think the muddying of the water is in social media, right? Because what's ended up happening now is, there are companies that are using social media to market to other companies or other people, other brands, and it becomes hard to indicate, well, you know, they have a million followers, but how many of these followers fall within the demographic?
So you're essentially agreeing with what I just said, that after all this time now, even though the first rush was this is going to get to all the right people, maybe the ad on Twitter isn't getting to where you think it's supposed to go, or it's not working for people.
Well, but the thing is, you're not even really making ads anymore. And what you're doing now is your posts, what you're putting out, is essentially the ad.
Okay.
Now, what you can do is enhance the ad or enhance the material that you put out. They give you these options of saying, hey, you have this certain type of reach right now. You can expand that reach to let's say 10 times more than what you're currently reaching right now. But then there's an investment in that. What people are starting to do is not use the 10x. What they're saying is, as a company, I have a million plus followers. Why do I need to have 10 million reach? So to your point, you know, if I feel like my followers fall within the demographic that I already need, I am less inclined to want to pay an additional fee through the site, because I've already did the legwork and built up my following. Now,
Kevin, I think I want to agree with what he just said. Should I?
Never. Don't give in.
No, but I mean, it makes sense, because like I said, I've been away from it for a while. So is that right, Kevin? You use your own stuff and your own content more than like a commercial, and you use yourself more than you would an ad. Is that what Thomas is saying, pretty much?
Yeah, I think it certainly depends on the kind of business, a lot. But I think he made some really strong points, and I would tend to agree. But, again, it depends,
I'm walking out.
What you're trying to accomplish with it. And, when you're doing, very individualized stuff and customized stuff, that's different from doing a total mass marketing, and they're all each has its own characteristics, and honestly people who are going to specialize in it people in the marketing world are going to specialize in different approaches to marketing, and you hire the ones that are
there for your
specialty needs.
Is at the risk of agreeing with him, encouraging him, which I would never want to do. Thomas is actually in the same sort of business.
I would always encourage Thomas.
All right. Well, but he's sort of in the same kind of business I am, in a lot of ways, in that he's, for those that don't know, Thomas is a terrific artist, and he's done some work for books and stuff. But he's looking to find people, but only specific people he wants to work with, not just people buying crap from him. And I'm kind of the same way at PTI. I mean, I want to find some, I could always use a few more clients, into my money management business, but I don't want the wrong people. I only want people that are right for me. So actually, Thomas, we're sort of in the same game, for lack of a better term.
I think my approach to any potential client that I have is maybe slightly different. I want to hear what their story is.
Right, right. Well, so do I. I mean,
and then I want to see if I am a good fit for them.
That's exactly right. So and there's a lot of people.
And you know, yours is very high touch, where, again, if you're just selling, you know, widgets of any kind, that's not so, you know, that's really, you know, you're working on numbers. You become essentially a card counter. If I get enough in here, then I'll if I get, you know, X number of people in here, I'll convert, you know, pick a percentage, and it might be a very small percentage, but that works out for you well, because you still, if you get enough critical mass to touch with you, then, you know, you get your percentage. You sell a lot of stuff.
All right, well, real quick, page two. Shoeless Joe, I want to ask you guys, because we need to do some sports here. I'm kind of this, Kevin, there's a guy here that reminds me a little bit of you. A guy named is Mike Jones. He answers questions for people on his Cora Digest thing. But he's a total, like, a deep dive guy, like you are. But whenever you and I disagree, you come back with like 50 facts to prove you right and me wrong type of thing. He's sort of that. So he's an aggravating, I mean, no, he's a great, great guy like that. But they were asking him, the question is, will Shoeless Joe ever get into the Hall of Fame, since his numbers during the series seem to indicate that he was not trying to throw it? What, first of all, I learn something every day. What exactly is, this new thing they're talking about? Percentage of, I don't know, there's another number here where every game you're graded where
is win share? Are you talking about war? Wins above replacements?
No, it's something else where they, let me see here. I'll find it. But he was talking about in every game of the World Series, he's played nine games, talking about that, that it appears that even though his overall average and RBIs and stuff for the series, if you just looked at it, WPA, win probability added. You ever heard of that?
Yes, yes.
What the hell is that?
Right. Basically, it states that the fact that you are on the field, you the probability of your team winning is quantified or becomes higher because of what you bring to the table.
So, like the guy in the Dodger game last night, he added like 100% with the three home runs and a single.
Right. Like without his production, the probability of that team winning is X.
Okay. And with it, it's something else. All right. Fair enough.
But what I would push back on that is. The stats may look great, but if there's a key moment in the game where you just happen to take a third strike when you could have hit the ball, or, you know,
that's exactly this guy's point. He's saying that says here he signed a confession saying that he accepted $5,000 to throw the series, but he later said he was manipulated into signing a document he could not read. Evidently, Joe Jackson could not read. I mean, I don't know if you knew that or not, Kevin, but.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't, so I mean, that's why I have you guys. It says here, and yes, his numbers for the series overall were good, 375, 394, 563 with three doubles and a home run. But let's remember, you don't have to throw every game to throw a series. The 19-9 series was a best of nine instead of our current best of seven, and we have now they have play-by-play data for this stuff. How are they getting that, Kevin? I mean, it was not on TV, was it? Which means we can look at WPA, win probability added, to see how Jackson did in key situations. So game one, he was a 4%. Then they lost. Game two, he was a 14. Game three, they won. He was a 0. He was a 0. not a good statement. Game four, he was 3%. Game five, he was minus 11. So I don't know what he did in game five. He must let balls go over his head. And it says, he was good in game two, terrible in game five, and great in game six and seven. He says, of course, at that point, the White Sox were one game away from elimination. You can't really draw strong conclusions from a small sample, but it's consistent with the idea that he played poorly until they were on the verge of elimination. And he's, but the interesting part is they claim that the gamblers didn't pay up after game five. So all of a sudden these guys decided, oh man, we gotta try and win the series now. So they won game six and seven, I guess, going away, and then lost game eight in a close game. So it's interesting how this is being taken apart, Kevin. So they're saying that just because he ended up with numbers that look good for the series that everybody's been looking at for the last 50 years, I've been listening to it, that if you actually go game by game, it's consistent with they tried to lose early, and then when they found out they weren't getting paid, then tried to win near the end, and everybody's numbers came up. It's interesting. I find it fascinating. I mean, I don't know if anybody else did, but...
First of all, yeah, there's a lot of source data there, but I'm sure they had to get their hands on scorecards and, all kinds of notes that that were manually stored and feed them into the computer. I would like to see, before I decide whether him being up and down over the course of the series, I would like to see what's typical for that. And what I mean by that is that a typical pattern for all kinds of players? And I suspect that it is. You know, there aren't that many that that produce game in and game out.
Right.
I have a really good player might have four hot games in a week and two more that are, don't do anything. You go over or you go over and make an error.
I think the better way to look at that would be through his historical value, right? So maybe not other players, but him himself in other series.
Well, here's this guy's conclusion, Thomas.
That's a good point, Thomas. Is you have his baseline. So what do you know about him?
What do you know about him? Because this is what you're trying to figure out, right? Did he do something that was manipulating or...
Well, here, let me finish what this guy says.
And then we got to go to break.
It's pretty fair. Then we got to head off to break. He says, the story is that the White Sox are trying to throw the first five games, but after the gamblers refused to pay off, started playing to win. Jackson's performance is also consistent with that part of the story. The first four games that the conspirators were trying to lose, he had 250 with zero RBI. The fifth game, he hit a home run once they were down by 5-0, and a double when the score was 10-1. So that game almost doesn't count either. So then there's his feeling. The Reds hit 9 triples in the series. 3 of them were to left field. Because I thought this guy was a center fielder, but evidently he's playing left field. Triples to left field are rare. It's a lot easier to botch a play in the field by simply not getting the ball than by intentionally dropping it or making a wild throw, and a lot less obvious. So in other words, this guy's concluding that he absolutely did try and throw the series through 5 games, and then when they didn't get paid, they tried to win and didn't get back fast enough. And he's claiming all the numbers are consistent with that. I find this fascinating, Kevin, what you can actually go back and find out about this stuff. Anyway. I don't know if you found that interesting or not, Kevin, but enlighten me.
Oh, yeah, I do. I think advanced, look, data is an interesting place to go wallow. You can
you can
come up with a lot of interesting conclusions. Just remember, this was a good job of a perfect example of that, what I keep harping on. There's having a lot of data, but then there's sort of assembling it, putting it into order, and making sense of it, and you have a really nice attempt there to actually make some sense of what he's seeing, and I think that's pretty cool.
I don't know the last time I've seen a whole bunch of triples to left field. It seems like there's hardly any there, but unless you have some kind of wacky park you're playing. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures on 28. Again, that's mostly because of Snapchat. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Mystery man came over and he said, I'm out of sight. He said, for a nominal service charge, I could reach Nirvana tonight. If I was ready, willing, and able.
Hello and welcome to Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Thomas Hall on the board. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures on 34. So, are we, am I to assume that Carl is the mystery man?
I'm sorry?
Are you the man in the music here? You're the mystery man, or?
Well, I don't know. You know, I guess we'll figure it out, huh?
How are you?
I'm doing well. It's, you know, it is the last alleged working day of the week, so they
think.
And so, you know, it is what it is. I'm watching with bemusement the wild disconnect between inflation, supply issues, which we have created out of whole cloth, and which we're going to continue to create for a significant period of time, particularly when it comes to energy, because, as you know, I've pontificated on before, behind every unit of economic output is a unit of energy. There's any way around that. And we're headed into winter, and I seem to remember that last year we had this little problem in Texas with a storm that we created ourselves. And we've only accelerated that process since, and yet, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, it's all Biden's fault. No, actually, it's everyone's fault, because we have allowed lies to replace truths. And you cannot make a lie true by repeating it, and it doesn't matter how many people believe it. Just ask Mr. Semmelweis. You'll have to hold a seance for that. But he was right, and everybody else, including the people who declared him a heretic and element of Satan, were wrong.
Well, what I mean, it is funny you should bring this up, Carl, because I was thinking about it on the way in this morning. In my little area, I mean, everybody's got stuff they know stuff about, and I think a lot of the people who come on the show are people that will read stuff outside their field. I mean, you certainly do, and try if something's interesting. They just have an intellectual curiosity on things. So, I mean, you know stuff that, you know, maybe people wouldn't expect. It's like a welder at Pullman might be an expert on the Pearl Harbor attack or something because he happens to be interested. I mean, I never shortchange anybody. I don't just say he's only a welder. What could he know about history? The guy might read four books a night, and I don't read four books a year. I mean, so I never shortchange anybody. But people also have their specific areas where, like, they're really good at. And I think you have some. And I happen to think that, and when it comes to monetary theory, I've been interested in that my whole life. I've studied under the best people, and it's an area that I think I could hold my own with just about anybody in the Federal Reserve, and maybe this current group, maybe would shine, shall we say. But the other areas, like, you know, the grid and those kinds of things, or how, you know, the supply chain stuff works with, like, what a Kevin or somebody, and how all that stuff, how everybody's computers intermatch with other people. I mean, he knows that crap. I don't. I mean, that's why I love to talk to him about it. And you have these, it seems though, what I find is everybody who comes on, whosever specific area they have that they're really, really good at, in addition to other areas they're pretty good at, every person seems to have this idea that we're going the wrong direction in this area. Whatever it is, whether it's the power grid, whether it's you know, Kevin would help, you know, with educating people for the jobs that are there. Not to say that they shouldn't be taking economics and sociology and history on top of it, but let's get people at least good at what they're going to do for, you know, in the job they're in. I mean, everybody we talk to seems to think that everything seems a little amiss. Every area there is. And am I reading this wrong?
No, I don't think you're reading it wrong. I think you're reading it right. I mean, it's one of the things that that I think there's... What we keep doing is we keep with putting together policies and programs that create these issues. Then the issue occurs. Okay, I mean we have at this point, since the Federal Reserve's been around, we have over 100 years of direct knowledge of when you do things, what happens, right? I mean, in the so-called modern era of fiat currencies and all of this. And so we know that stuffing the budget with more money at the government level than you take in via taxes, and which exceeds the growth rate of the economy, right? Because that's really the balance, is that if the economy is growing at 3%, and you allow, in real terms, and you allow the emission of credit by somebody, doesn't matter who it is, and the government says, oh, no, that's all ours to use on whatever programs we want to, you know, we have been voted in to do, that remains in balance because the economy is getting bigger at the 3% rate, all right? But if you, all of a sudden, you go out and the economy contracts because you lock everything down, you tell everybody that they need to be scared out of their mind and stay in their house for however long, and you just throw credit at the system to allow people to sit at home and smoke bong hits while this thing goes on. The belief that you can do that and not have it show up in inflation is flat out crazy.
Well, here's what's happened. Carl, if you notice the change in me in the last however many years we've been together, I used to think, like Milton Friedman thought, and maybe he was right in his era, that this is all somewhat by accident, that the Fed really didn't believe what they were doing, didn't think they were going to have the effect, thought it was going to be temporary, transitory, that they just tried to do the right thing and somehow bleeped up, you know, sort of like the helping the, you know, we could go through a whole bunch of different things. And these were just programs that were, they just didn't work out right, but they were all well-meaning and everything. But now after seeing so many of these come this way, and I see the same people being helped by the program, the same people being hurt, I'm not so sure it's just a random event that they just kind of messed up. I mean, I'm going to say, like, for me today, I'll give you an example in my business. I mean, I thought Intel was going to come out lousy after the earnings. Okay, so this thing's trading 56, and I did the 53 spread, figured the thing would be down, 5, 6%. Well, guess what? It's down 10 or 11. Well, I didn't intend to, now just today I'm going to be scrambling. Hopefully I got it cheap enough that I think I might make a cent or two, and if I break even, I guess I'll be happy. But it's the total lack of, when people don't try and fix it, or they don't react to whether they're right or wrong. I don't have any problem. One thing I'm finding in this generation, Carlos, you have to be not afraid to make a decision. I mean, I can't be afraid to put the trade on. I have to trust my opinion, and I have to say, get it for the right price, realize I think it's worth it what I'm doing, and I gotta pull a trigger. I mean, there's not a lot of that going on. I think that's one of the reasons the supply chain is so screwed up. People aren't pulling the trigger and saying, hey, it looks like there needs some more trucks. Let me go out and buy a couple and hire a couple of guys. I mean, I don't see that. But my point is with the Fed, for them doing what they were doing with the COVID, with shutting the place down, pouring money into the system for a couple of months, you know what, Carl? I got no problem with that. But now my problem is here we are 16 months into it, or 18 months into it, and it's very obvious that there's too much money in the system. And when you get like Esther George, what her name is, and a couple of the other, I won't say anything bad, of the Fed talk, well, you know, we're going to talk about it at next month's meeting, and we're going to talk about it maybe the next quarter, next year. The example on the way in, how's this for a stupid example? If you and I decide that our problem at our golf course is we just don't water it enough, okay? So we decide we're going to turn the water on for 4 hours instead of 2.5. Well, at the end of 3 weeks, we find the place is like flooding, and we got grubs, and we got dead grass, and we start get some story where we go, we think we're gonna go to Jackson Hole in December and talk about this policy, and maybe we'll cut back. It's obvious, Carl. Get your ass over and turn the knob off. Whether they did it right then, right now, today, call your bump at the New York Fed and tell him to stop calling his buddy over at J.P. Morgan and stop buying these friggin' bonds today. I mean, what am I missing?
Well, what you're missing is that if you do that, what you're going to see in the market is the market is going to say, but Congress says they're going to blow, whatever it is today. Manchin says $2 trillion. Biden says it's going to be 5. Bernie Sanders says he'd like it to be 40. And the problem with all of that is that all of a sudden the market turns around and says, no, you're not. Not unless you want to pay 8%.
Right.
But that's what it's supposed to be because, I have some money, you have some money, okay? But let's say that I say I want a Lambo. And I can afford a Lambo. Okay, fine. Then I wreck it and I want another one. And I didn't have enough insurance. I want another one. Well, now I don't have enough money. So I go to borrow the money. Well, what is my income potential to back up the loan to buy that Lambo? Right? And isn't that how it's rated? Isn't that how the interest rate is supposed to be set?
Well, yeah. But the risk, Carl, is, in fact, I just talk about I went into stupid stories this morning, but I like hacking around with old trucks. So I call this guy I emailed him. Nobody calls anybody anymore. He's got this old two-door Chevy Blazer, told a story the other day. But the thing is worth on Kelley Blue Book or anything, it's worth $5,000, maybe $4,500, because it's in pretty nice shape. The guy wants 12. And you say to yourself, but I think what I want to talk to you about is, what does this do for the system? That now all of a sudden, that if I went and bought this thing, which I wouldn't, but if I did, I would find a way to write the $12,000 check. I'm not gonna, but that's not the way the rest of the world thinks. I'm gonna say that somehow, some way, somebody's gonna give me a $10,000 loan on this thing that's worth $5,000. Right? I mean, obviously people are still buying used cars at these prices, so somebody's lending them the dough. I don't think people are walking in and dropping the check down. Maybe somebody is, but very, very few. So, okay, now I put a grand down and I went to, somebody, Joe's, or that, I'm sure they found me a guy, Joe's Auto. Now I'm wearing a nine or an $11,000 loan on something that's worth $4,500. So then now I go to my insurance company and I get insurance on it. Now I don't buy any I don't buy any extra. Okay. So the insurance company looks at Kelley Blue Book and all of a sudden somebody steals it or runs into it. Guess what? Here's your check for $4,500, which is the person-to-person price for this truck. Okay. Right. Now I owe 12 or 11. I got a $4,500 check, from the insurance company. And that, now what do I do? Now is the bank?
Well, you're 6 or 7 in the hole now, aren't you?
Yeah. So I mean, the idea. I mean, you can't look at like the housing prices, like the amount of. If you were to take the 25 or 30% increase in housing prices in the last year, okay, and look at. I mean, there's a guy on TV or radio in Chicago talking about how that's $80,000 in the average house and how you should go get a loan for that and spend it on other stuff because it's only 2%.
It's crazy.
So now all of a sudden, what do you suppose if we did the math, Carl, would take us, you and I, 10 minutes to work together. If we did the math on that, what is the leverage now on the increase? Say what, 10% of the homes have changed hands in the last year? Is that probably... Most people own their home for 7 years, so that would mean what?
Yeah.
15% of the homes change hands every year?
Yeah, 13 years.
So if it's 15%, it's now up 30%, and it's all mortgaged. For God's sake, how much money is that is now on the leverage scale, on the mortgage leverage scale, and do we really think that and if the Fed's right, that it's, quote, transitory, which if they were being nice to us, most people will take that to mean the prices are going to come back down. If they're going to come back down, what did you just do to the place in terms of...
Well, you lit it on fire.
Yeah.
Right? And see, that's the whole problem with this entire set of policies, is that we have done this serially You know, we did this back in 2008, okay? We had a bunch of clowns who were running around singing to everybody, these are great investments. And on the phone, on their own internal recorded calls, they were saying, this stuff's dog squeaks.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? It's worthless. It's got no value whatsoever. We had multiple banks that blew up, that were publicly traded. The Colonial was one of the big examples that I covered at the time it happened. Colonial somehow magically, in the space of less than a month from the time that they filed their previous quarter until they were seized by the FDIC and ultimately merged, somehow their asset base dropped in value by a third. Somehow.
It was never there to begin with.
Well, that's right. It was never there to begin with. Now, guess what? If I do something like that in business, and I con you into believing that I have $100,000 in the bank and there's only $40,000 there, I go to jail.
Well, but the system is set up. All it takes, I mean, where's Audrey when I need her? Her friend Nancy has been on the air. How many people does it take, Carl, to get, you know more about this than me, and they obviously know more than I do. If you got an area where all the houses are 250, and they've been 250 for whatever, not everyone's 250. The guy with the better bathroom's gonna be 260, the other guy's 250, but average 250, and all of a sudden we get a currency event like the Fed's doing, and somebody walks in and says, "Well, I'm gonna pay 3." Now it's not gonna appraise at 3, right? It's gonna appraise at 250. But the guy's gonna say, "Okay, give me my mortgage based on 250, and here's the other $50,000, and writes a check. Now, if two guys do that, that's what I'm asking you, how many people have to do that before now everybody's house in the area is allegedly worth 3? It can't be more
than
3.
Well, I don't know, but I'll tell you what. You take a look at what has happened in the places that happened here. This was reassessment year, and we had a couple of sales in this immediate area, and all of a sudden everybody's house assessments, according to the tax assessor, are up by 30%. Well, can I protest that? No, because there are actual transactions that support those values. Now, I could say, well, that's a bunch of BS, but the fact is that you've got recorded sales at the, at the deed office. Okay? So I'm going to lose if I protest that. Well, excuse me, what do people think happens on a permanent basis when that occurs? Now, in my case, it isn't going to destroy me in terms of what's likely to do to my property taxes. But how about the guy down the road? He didn't get a 30% raise.
Well, right. But we talk all the time, Carl. Man, our conversations, you bring up stuff that I don't necessarily know about, so that's why I love having you. But the conversations are really kind of the same thing. Everybody on the show, even though we have all different political views, it comes down to, it's okay to have a policy. It's okay to think ahead and try and lead a little bit. But you got to keep your friggin' eyes open. And every once in a while, you have to sit around and say, is the CPI over the last 20 years, is it remotely close? And the answer is no. But right. I remember the 2008 thing. There was a lady used to listen to the show. I think she's dead now. But she'd write me from time to time. And she lived in an area of Chicago way that people don't even know this area exists. She lived way the hell out in the O's. We go from the K's to the L's to the M's. Well, there's only a couple spots in the city that go so far west. So she's like on Cumberland and Belmont's out there. And it's a nice little neighborhood. I got some pictures. I've never been out there. But it's all these single family, mostly frame homes, blue collar area, and most of the people, she told me they had this block party, and they're sitting there in 2007, and the kids are in and asleep, and the adults are out there getting sloshed in the street, and she said they did a show of hands. There were a couple of houses that traded for like $450, and I'm going to say the average price within the last 10 years, it had been white, now it was like half Hispanic, half white, just real nice neighborhood, no issues whatsoever. And I think there were a few blacks in there too, but it was, like I said, it was an integrated, just regular kind of neighborhood, and everybody had paid somewhere in the neighborhood, depending on when you bought it, between 175 and 250. And now a couple of them dropped for like 4.25, because of the 2007 fiasco. And she goes, every single person says, "I cannot come close to affording my own house." You know, here's an observation, why don't, I mean, clearly just because you have two things now that go for three and everybody else is at two, that doesn't mean everybody else in that neighborhood can all of a sudden afford 50 grand for the same place. Nothing's changed for them. And I think our people should be observing that now. Even if their initial policy was right-headed, was the right thing to do, was well thought out, they have to realize that this is not working at this level. Or maybe it's only working for a few people. And as I get older, I'm thinking because it's working for the few people, they don't care about the rest of the people. And I think it's much more sinister than just a mistake.
Well, I don't think it's a mistake at all. I look at the things that have gone on in the context of the last couple of years. And, you know, now we are finding, as an example, it's just a revelation of yesterday, I believe it actually came out, that we got FOIA documentation out of the NIH that essentially conclusively proves that the NIH, our government, in collaboration with the Chinese at the Wuhan Institute, were in fact conducting exactly the sort of research that could have led to what happened. Okay, and we paid for it. We funded it. Our government did that. And Anthony Fauci lied about that under oath, repeatedly. Now, if you or I go to Congress because we get summoned, and we put our right hand up, and we swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, to help us God, and then we don't, we go to jail. And we should go to jail. And yet, here we are with how many people dead, and the people looking into why that might have happened get stonewalled and deliberately lied to by people within our own government. How many people have gone to jail? And you say, well, but, I say, no. You go back to 2007, 2008, how many of them lied then? Does anybody remember Dick Fuld on CNBC? I'm going to burn the underwear, the shorts.
Yeah.
Okay. Was he right or was he wrong? We know because the Veluccas report was published after that whole thing was over. That not only did Lehman know they were bankrupt, but Citibank knew they were bankrupt, and the Federal Reserve knew they were bankrupt. All of them knew they were bankrupt more than a month before they blew up because they were trying to do tri-party repos and had no collateral.
Well, it clearly, if anybody, you know, this is what I'm sort of seeing kind of go through society. I mean, it's at every level, Carl. I mean, if you're driving down the expressway and all of a sudden one guy peels out and flies around you at 100 miles an hour, instead of the rest of the people saying, there goes an idiot, you're going to find, within the next 30 seconds...
Yeah, three more people behind him.
Three more people behind him. And but it's reaching a point now where the crime and punishment is so haphazard or so non-existent by anybody that there's never anything that these people... I mean, the guys from the Federal Reserve, if they were front-running any kind of information, you don't just say, see, I'll resign, send me my pension, I'm going back to be a college professor again. I don't get to do that. These people are all over us. We just have another audit here, even though we passed fine. I mean, every trade, what are you doing? What are you doing? How did you find this out? You know, what are you doing on the radio? I mean, for God's sake, Carl, this double and triple standard here has got to stop, or there's going to be, there's going to be some pushback, something somewhere. I mean, this isn't, or people just decide if we can't spank those people, I can do whatever I want either, or on top of
Chief, when I sold my internet company, I of course had inside information on the firm that acquired the company. Okay, because that's what happens, right? You have to lift your kimono up, they have to lift their kimono up, and you get to take a look at how ugly all the stuff that's under the kimono is. And after the transaction closed, I called up the very well-reputed legal firm in Chicago that did the advising on it. One of the people that's a named partner there is a very good friend of mine, and I said, look, after completing my analysis on this, I'm reasonably sure that within the next couple of years, these guys are, you know, effed, right?
Yeah.
I want to buy some puts.
Well, yeah.
And he said, do you have a retainer check for when you get arrested for that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you know, and the thing is, I mean, that would have been a blatantly illegal thing for me to do. Okay, so I did not. But the reality is that the only reason that anybody follows any law is because 99%+ of the population chooses to do so. That's the only reason that, I mean, you can have all laws of the book you want. We have one of the largest imprisoned populations in the world. It's about 600 and some people per million, which is 0.6%.
Yeah, it's huge.
Okay, well, it's actually, no, but think about this. What if 1% of the population decided that tomorrow it is not against the law to rob banks?
Well, back up a little bit. It was Jefferson or somebody mentioned that the reason why people don't go out and steal from somebody who's drunk on the sidewalk is because it's wrong, not because it's illegal.
Well, that's right, my point is this. If even 1%, let's just say that 1% of the population was to come to the conclusion that whatever mandate, whatever law, whatever you want it to be, whether it is jab mandates for a job, whether it is thou shalt not rob banks, thou shalt not eject every illegal invader from this nation, regardless of whether or not people like it or not, and if they refuse to leave, then, you know, we're going to take care of business on our own. If 1% of the population was to decide that, there is no law. There aren't enough cops, there aren't enough jail cells, there aren't enough judges, and there aren't enough juries, and that law doesn't exist. Okay, so why is it that we have all of these people that have played this game repeatedly over the last 20 years in the financial markets? Why is it that we have all of these other, you know, other, all this other stuff that's going on? We now have these mandates, we have other this and that and everything. Look at what happened. This just happened with the Federal Reserve and their trading policies. Look at what's happened to the medical industry over the last 3 years that has completely ignored 15 United States Code, a criminal felony statute that twice has been to the Supreme Court and they have been found to be covered by it, right, in the 1970s and early 1980s. Not one of those people has been prosecuted and gone to jail, and as a result, all of them commit that offense every single day.
Okay, they think it's okay because that's what we do. SP futures up 3, NASDAQ futures down 29, mostly because of Snapchat. We get Carl's view on that when we come back as well. Just about everything. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, Northbound Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hall. Mr. Thomas Hall on the board. S&P futures up 275. Nasdaq futures up, down 28. Again, we have Snapchat is down 15 bucks. It was down 20. It's trading 60, so that's down from 75. So let's call that a 20%. We've got Intel is down 550 to $50.50, and I wanted it at 53. I wish they would have called me. 53 was fine, then they went and had a phone call, and then they made it even worse. Those idiots. We got Facebook is down 1475. They're kind of on the same thing, and we see where Twitter is. Twitter was getting whacked too as well. I will find that in a second here. TWTR, right, Thomas? There we go. Twitter's down 205 to 63.35. It's not as bad as the Facebook, but everybody in that area is kind of sneaking down. Again, S&P futures down 2, NASDAQ up 2, NASDAQ futures down 29, Dow futures up 64. Individual stocks in the Dow, we got Goldman Sachs up 141, Home Depot up 119. Home Depot's had a nice run lately. Again, Intel is in the Dow. They're down 550. American Express is up 373. They had earnings as well, so obviously they did a little better. We're in Asia. We've got Nikkei up 96. These guys got hammered yesterday, so they're making some of that back. That's 0.3%. Shanghai down 12.3%. Hang Seng up 109.4. And again, Carl's opinion on this in a second, but Evergrande somehow, after being somebody was going to take a part of their business and blah, 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 well, that all fell apart, but somehow they made their $83 million interest payment that was due today. How they got the dough, I guess we'll find out someday. DAX up 125.8%, FTSE up 39.5. Now, these guys have been slow the last couple days while we were up, so here's catch up. CAC around up 62.9%. Yesterday, Dow was down 6, S&P up 13 to a new record, NASDAQ was up 94. Bonds, up a little bit, up almost a half a basis point to 1.68. Again, that's we're pushing at 1.7, which would be as high as we've seen in quite a while. Bund, minus 0.08. I really love it when these guys get above zero, and I think it's coming. Japan, positive 0.095, so they're inching toward 0.10, which would be new for them for a long time. Oil up 77 cents, 83.27. Brent up 78 cents, 85.39. Natural gas up 16 cents, 5.27. And you want to be like Carl. He sold at 6.09, bought at 4.99, and now he's the other way. He's fat and happy, as they say. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.50. We've got gold up 1740, 1799.30. Will we do 1800 today? That'd be nice. Silver up 34 cents, 24.48. And we got copper unchanged. Last but not least, Bitcoin up 398, 63,478. There was a guy on yesterday said we have to decide whether it's a security or a commodity. And I'm going to add to the end of that or neither of the above. Anyway. Thomas, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
All righty, it's now 7:37 here in the Chicagoland area as we venture on towards the weekend, Chief. The weather today is as follows. It's 46 degrees here. We're going to reach a high of about 54 with some slight chances of showers here. In the Phoenix area, they're currently 60 degrees. They're going to reach a high of 90. In Chicago's traffic, Chief, there is a crash on the I-80 westbound right before the Hobolt. And it took about 15 feet of guardrail that is still sitting in the left lane. So the traffic remains jammed in the Joliet heading west from Larkin. Also on the I-57 inbound, there is a crash near 127th over on the right, then a crash near the 119th. So it looks like we have some very shady or shaky driving heading into the Chicagoland area today, Chief. In sports, in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors were victorious as they won over the Los Angeles Clippers, 115-113. In the NL championships, we had the Dodgers winning and staying alive as they won 11-2 against the Atlanta Braves. In the NFL, we had the Browns winning against the Denver Broncos as the Browns put out their hello, Case Keenum, a backup quarterback and backup running back, but were able to get the victory 17-14. In the NBA, full slate, the Bulls have their home opener as they face the New Orleans Pelicans, sans Zion Williams, as he is not in the lineup tonight. So it looks like promising for a Bulls victory, Chief, going 2-0.
Cena is our assistant sports director. I did not realize I got home last night, and somehow or another I watched the last two innings of the game. Atlanta, Carl's from the South. He should know this crap. Atlanta has been up 3-1 in best-of-seven series 5 times in the last 30 years and lost all 5 of them. How do you do that?
Good question.
How do you, going back to Bobby Cox and those guys? I know Maddox and those guys were up 3-1 against somebody, and they going back to like the, I don't know, why don't you see if we can dig that up, Thomas? That's a fascinating statistic. How do you do that? Five times? I mean, it's all different teams. I mean, it's not
well,
the
one,
same
you team, have to be, you have to be very good to be there at least 5 times.
Yeah. Well, so, that's true. And be 3-1 up on somebody.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that it's more about the hitting or lack of, because they've always been pretty solid from a pitching standpoint. I actually meant to ask both of you gentlemen a question, as I'm an avid boxing follower. Chief, if you had one fighter in your lifetime who would fight for your life, freedom, or however you want to look at it, who would be your fighter of choice and why?
You mean the best fighter?
The fighter, if you were like, there's one guy and I need to, he's going to fight for my freedom, kind of a Game of Thrones style,
I'm
you have
say,
to pick your warrior.
The conventional wisdom is that Muhammad Ali was the best fight. Well, on the middleweight level, Sugar Ray Robinson probably was the best. I've been doing some research in this area. An awful lot of people now are saying, without a doubt, the best heavyweight ever was Sonny Liston. And there's a lot to back that up. I'm going to say when he was in his prime, I don't think anybody could have touched him, Carl. I think he was just an odd human being in terms of his size and his reach and his power. I mean, he was like no other human I've ever looked at. I mean, even George Foreman said I sparred with the guy when he was like 50 years old, and he was the most powerful hitter I ever had, and he was 50 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, so anyway, but it's a, I have a question, Carl. Get back to our, we always talk about, you know, the big guys getting, you know, somehow they're above the law and everything. But let me add, let's bring it down to, let's say, our level, or, I mean, the level of people. When I was on the board of the CBOE, the individual members were very concerned about the integrity of the market. I mean, they would take a big hit rather than do something wrong, because they knew that this was a new kind of market. It was an open outcry. There was a sanctity to how we did business. I mean, it came out of the Board of Trade. It's open. Everybody got a chance to play. And, by the way, these are the rules and you play by the rules. It was almost like 16-inch softball. You know, you don't even need an ump. We all know what we're doing out here. And yet some of the firms and some of the people, they never played that way. They played from the New York way of doing things. And it was always use the term, some cheating going on. And to me, Carl, it's exactly what we're talking about. The microcosm was, you know, it has to do with regulators. It has to do with self-regulating exchanges, right? It was the term. But you'd go to a board meeting. And now we know that if Carl was one contract over position limits 3 months in a row, I mean, let's get out the paddles. And Carl is immediately called a recidivist, right? And how's that for a term, this hour in the morning? That he didn't care. It wasn't like he made a mistake once or twice. He had no respect for the rules, and he rode roughshod over this position limit stuff. Of course, there isn't a guy on earth that would say how you being one contract over position limit would hurt anybody anywhere, right? Because it wouldn't have. Especially then, in those days, when the position limit was 2,000 contracts, now it's like 30,000. I don't know if it's that high, but it's pretty high. And, but yet, if a member firm who had a whole different view of things would do something, and even have a history of it, if you were to mention that at a board meeting, the other guys, you could just see the sphincters clutch. Oh no!
Oh yeah!
I mean, what do you want us to do? If we bring this up, we might have to suspend Goldman Sachs for a day. And what I'm talking about is something like this, Carl. For instance, if somebody would wander into a crowd, those firms have no morals about stealing from their own customer. So if somebody would have known, say, I need to do this spread, 2,000 times. And they'll go, it looks like you can do it at a half. Okay? Because they'll take the other side. They'll facilitate the trade is what they call it. They'll take the other side if they couldn't get it done on the floor. So they're going to do it at a price they want, not a price their customer wants. Which, of course, when you take the other side of a trade as a broker, it's like it's illegal anyway. Of course, there was a part of Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or somebody that wasn't the brokerage side. They were the other side with the alleged Chinese wall between them, which, of course, there was no such thing as a Chinese wall. Anyway, you know where I'm going with this. So they'll come to the floor and they'll say, we have this spread 2,000 times. What's your market? And the guys might go, an eighth, three-eighths. Oh, can you fill me a three-eighths? Well, yeah. And say it's 1,000 times. Okay, so that's we're going to put the spread up at a half.
Right.
You guys can participate like 100 apiece, but we want 500 out of the 1,000. I'll knock it down to 1,000. So 1,250 times 1,000 is what? $112,000, right? Or $12,000.
Yeah.
$12,000. Now, last time I heard, a felony was what? $100. So they just stole $12,000 from their own customer, right? And oh, by the way, elicited the other people that if we get you 100, you'll let us do it. this would go on constantly. Not constantly, but a lot. Now, if the independent brokerage firm of name of my firm used to TPHCO, if a Thipco employee, Thomas Hall, went out and did that, I'd be suspended, we'd be gone. Yet, when you go to the board, there's this level, Carl, and this is what I'm trying to make. The question is a long-winded question. How big do you have to get? How do you know when you've crossed the line over into untouchable? Because if it was Goldman Sachs, they're going to sit there and go, they could go down there with a knife and slice 15 people. You will never see a headline that says CBOE suspends Goldman Sachs for a week. You would never, ever see it. And I'm just using them as an example. But I mean, sometimes they were the knaves. But what happened is the customers had wandered around too. The customers that were front running stuff, doing the stuff like you didn't want to do by puts and they would go from firm to firm. So they would have.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, the firms weren't necessarily the knaves, but the people behind. But my point is, at what point do you have to go where my broker would never do that? Because A, because it was wrong, and B, because he knows he or she would get caught. Now there were bigger firms than me a lot. Now, even those guys wouldn't go down that road. I mean, even the bigger brokerage firms. Yet these guys had no problem with it. None whatsoever. And they were just absolutely above the law. And my question to you is, how do you get there? I don't know if I want to be there, but how do I get there? I mean,
I don't know that you do get there other than being politically protected. But the other, what ends up happening ultimately is that this becomes ignored by the population at large because we refuse to use the word shall. You've probably seen the stuff comes out of the various so-called conservative think tanks, the Heritages of the world and such. And you see this all the time. You see it on the news. You see it in both sides of the media, liberal and the conservative side, both. They say, well, we should do something. Okay, whatever the something is. No one ever stands up and says, you shall. Even when in the law, in the statute, when you look at prompt corrective action, which is, you know, which was the root of all of the things that went wrong in 2008. Prompt corrective action is a law. And it says that the FDIC shall perform surveillance of lending institutions for the sort of nonsense that was going on during that period of time, and shall promptly correct any deficiencies they find. It doesn't say they should. It doesn't say they may. It says they shall. Well, guess what? They didn't shall anything.
No.
Okay? And so as a result, we had institution after institution. You know, I started writing the market ticker because in the first quarter of 2007, Washington Mutual was paying dividends out of capitalized interest, which is not money. That's how they were doing it. And they weren't hiding it. It was in their quarterly report. They should have been closed the next morning after they filed that 10-Q.
Oh, yeah.
That's what the law required the FDIC to do. It wasn't a discretionary call. They were required by law to do it. And yet we allow this kind of thing going on all the time. And this is why we're in the mess we're in with the supply chains. It's why we're in the mess that we're in with regards to COVID. It's why we have a crazy inflation problem, and it's why we have a Congress and a Federal Reserve that ignore the law anytime they feel like it. Because there's nobody, statistically nobody, within the United States, people like you and I, that will stand up and say, shall means shall, either do it or else. And we don't care what the consequences are, you're going
to
do
it. Now, but now, it used to be, I mean, before our time, when people in the, you know, when this didn't happen in the, you know, the panic of 1895 or whatever, if they screwed up, at least you could say to yourself, we don't have anybody even watching this stuff. Now we got a bazillion people we're paying. I mean, this thing from, I mean, even the COVID. Okay, if we didn't have, you know, 900 swinging idiots, they're not, I'm sure there's some brilliant people there, working for the CDC, if we didn't have a CDC, we would say to yourself, well, maybe we should have some people that watch what's going on worldwide and watch these trends and they act to protect us. Maybe as an economy, we say we can afford, you know, 200
right.
people here that's all they do is watch trends in flu and watch if smallpox breaks out of those little areas, not smallpox, I don't think, or measles breaks out of this little area in Africa. They're going to let us know about it. We're going to be on guard, and these guys are going to do that for us. And I can understand that, but now we have friggin' half the country working for the federal government, and it's no better, right? I mean, what are the 15,000 people that are in the consumer fraud group that Elizabeth Warren demanded? What do they do all day, Carl? There's more fraud now than ever seen.
Well, yeah, that's exactly the problem. Is that, you know? I mean, supposedly it's illegal to spoof your phone number and spam call people.
Yeah.
Okay, with a robot. That's supposed to be, that supposedly has been illegal for quite some time. It is trivially easy for telephone carriers to prevent that from happening. Trivially easy. And the answer is simply this. If you set the outgoing phone number, you have to own the number that you set it to. And if you enforce that, the problem goes away. And you stop getting these phone calls from random numbers in your area code.
Have you spotted the latest? Well, I mean, the latest to me, I'm not. My truck's 20 years old. I have to, every day I get a warranty call for my truck.
Yeah.
But get a load of this, Carl. They actually will ask you on there, if you don't want these calls, you know, hit this button. Well, I've now gotten warranty calls from 30 states in the union. So if I hit the one for 312 area code, I think I just stop that number, and the next day I get a call from another number.
Well, you stop that number, but you're going to get one from another number because the number's faked. It doesn't actually belong to the person who called you.
How do you do that, out of curiosity?
It is entirely reasonable to allow it if you own the number in question because, for example, when I ran my company, we had a bunch of incoming trunks, and if I want to make a phone call out to somebody and I dial 9 on my phone to get an outside line, then that call is not going to go out from 312-803-MCF1, which is the main number for the for the company. It is going to go out on some other trunk. Well, so I am allowed to set the number that I allegedly called from to be 312-803-MCS1. Okay? And that is a perfectly reasonable thing, because if I call you and you don't answer, but you have caller ID, now you know that the phone call came from MCS now. Okay? And so you call back at the main number. Well, the problem is that capacity, that capability to do that, has been abused, ridiculously so, by people that use internet-based calling systems. The system is called SIP. But it is easy for the carriers to require that if you set that number, it has to be in a database of phone numbers you physically own, that are yours, that you're paying for. And if not, it rejects it. But you know what? That takes an extra two lines of software in their equipment, so they don't do it, and nobody goes to jail for letting that happen.
Well, the government does it. If you get a call from, I guess, one of the agencies, you try and call them back, the number doesn't go anywhere.
Well, but see, the thing is there's no problem fixing this problem. Okay, there's no issue fixing this. There's just no will to fix it, and there's no will to enforce the law. It's illegal to pretend to be somebody else, especially an official, okay, a government official. That's fraud. It's common law, you know, it's a common law thing. Well, guess what? We could solve this problem, but we don't want to.
Well,
and so we don't.
We had a guy at, we had a guy, I had a professor, we had a guy, how Southside is that girl? I had a professor at the University of Chicago. We had to take, I mentioned this before, out of all the business and other courses, you had to take one, I won't call it like a social science course, but it was an application of the principles you were learning kind of course, right? And he went through, using regression analysis he had money from the government to try and put up a regression analysis thing to compare, care at various hospitals, which is actually really hard to do because it's such a subjective thing. But, so they tried to pick out individual stuff that, you know, like gallbladders that you take out that didn't need to be taken out, infections in the hospital, poisoning from the cafeteria, stuff that was finite, right? And they tried to put that kind of, anyway, he did that kind of work, but he also did a lot of work on crime and punishment. And he said, you know, I started from the assumption that criminals, I'm not talking about, you know, the guy in Les Miserables that needed a loaf of bread for somebody, or somebody who murders his boyfriend or girlfriend because they're crazed, or anybody who even rapes somebody because that's a crime of harm, not of sex. We're going to get rid of all that stuff. Let's just look at regular crime, money crime, which he says, which is like 95% of all crime, which in Chicago, no, because there's more murders. But by and large, it's businesses doing something they're not supposed to, or people robbing stores or whatever, right? And he says, if you figure that this is rational, he goes, one of the ways, if you're going to do rational punishment, you have to make the fine, it needs to be at least the amount that was stolen divided by the percentage chance of being caught.
Correct.
See, he goes, this is only common sense. He says, so in other words, if you steal a case of beer from the 7-Eleven, and in your town, your police are like really good, and you get a 20% chance of being caught, then the fine should be 5 cases of beer. Because then you're going to say to your buddy, let's go steal a case of beer, and he's going to say, wait a minute.
Not worth it.
It's not worth it. It's a zero-sum game. Why would we do that? And yet, and certainly in my industry and every other industry would bank, you're never, now, not even going to the part where you're saying it's a law, let's actually put somebody on the board of directors in jail. I'm saying if the bank has made, you know, $10 billion on screwing with this rule for 10 years, and they're the first bank that ever got caught by it, so give it a 10% chance of being bought, that the fine has to be $100 billion. Right? Because then the shareholders...
That's the thing, is that if you're gonna actually rationally punish people for violating the law, the punishment has to be stiff enough that economically the offense doesn't make sense.
Yes. So, I mean, and you're actually gonna...
And that's the only way you're ever gonna stop it. But the thing is, we don't even do that, you know, we in the medical system, which, by the way, is why we have all this nonsense going on right now with regards to everything else related to COVID, okay, is because we've sat around, for 40 years, we've allowed this to go on. And now, all of a sudden, it starts showing up in mandates and all this other sort of stuff, and, you know, and all this game playing with masking kids in schools and other, you know, essentially, you don't have to worry about your own health, it's somebody else's problem. we're gonna put this on people who are too young and too immature to be able to do anything about it. We as Americans have done this. We allowed this when Obamacare came in. We put this in place when that happened. Obamacare was put into place because the medical system was about to collapse under its own weight from extorting people and had run out of money that they could steal. And people were going bankrupt as a result of it at a rate that eventually was going to collapse the system. So in comes the government and says, oh, by the way, we're going to cost shift this onto, you know, basically I have to buy health insurance for the guy who's a junkie down the street. Okay, I have to pay his premium, essentially. But then, did you notice what they did? Because Delta Airlines and a couple of other places have gotten real cute with this and said if you haven't been vaccinated or if your spouse hasn't been vaccinated, you're going to get fined, essentially, with a higher price, right?
Yeah.
That's illegal under the PPACA. Guess what? The large corporations were exempted from the community rating requirements within the Obamacare. That's why they can do this. The only rating differential that is allowed within Obamacare is for smoking and a series of bans for age, and that's it. Everything else is forbidden under federal law. But if you're a self-insured employer, which most of these large companies are, essentially all of them, you're exempt from those provisions. So what they did was they screwed all the small and medium-sized businesses for the benefit of the large ones. The large business can turn around and fine people like this and essentially stick a gun in your face to make you take a medical treatment, whereas a small business is legally forbidden from doing that.
Well, that's what happens when you have these bills that nobody reads, Carl, except you.
Well, I read it before it was passed, and I said, this is exactly what's going to happen. This is why it's been put in place, and you are going to get hosed, and nobody paid any attention to it, and 10 years later, here we are.
Well, now, if you know how to do this stuff, why can't we just, the next big bill that comes through, why can't we make you a partner of PTI and have something in there that says, you know, if you have like $40 billion, you must use the chief to manage your money, and oh, by the way, he gets to charge you like 10% a year or something.
Well, I got some bad news for you. I stayed up all night to do that with Obamacare. It was just under 1,000 pages, but I had all my screens, you know, because I have multi-screen trading system here, right? So I've got, you know, the panoramic thing, which is what you have to do because they say these two sentences are taken out of this place and replaced with this, right?
Okay, so we got a dash, buddy.
You have 50 windows open.
Oh, we got a dash, buddy. Have a good weekend. SP Futures down 250, NASDAQ Futures down 45. I didn't get a chance to ask you about Snapchat, but is it going to keep going or what?
No, I think this is done.
All right, bud. We'll be back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks. Thomas, nice job.
Be aggressive. Learn how to push. Talk to him. Ask him questions. Ask him rhetorical questions. Doesn't matter. Anything. Just get a yes out of him. If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down. If you can't learn how to close, you better start thinking about another career. And I am deadly serious about that.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.